We'll talk about Toronto FC, but we have to talk about, I guess, the breaking news. Cristiano Ronaldo suspended 5 games.
Right.
It's a hell of a way to start your campaign.
It is, yeah. It's really a 4-game, really, when you think about it, because he was going to miss the Super Cup anyway because he got the second yellow card. So, yeah, kind of disappointed that he sort of petulantly did that and, you know, fully deserves it.
Why would you do that if you're Cristiano Ronaldo?
You lose your head in moments, right? I mean, he's human like everyone else. You know, he scored that great goal and then kind of did the mocking celebration of Messi. So I think he was just, you know, tensions were high and he was full of adrenaline and he lost his head for a moment.
Now, I would imagine that if there's any team in football can lose a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo and still have a bit of success, you would think it would be Real Madrid. But I mean, obviously it's not just another player they're missing. Any chance that this becomes significant in terms of La Liga, because it is 4 matches, you know, and it'll probably come down to them and Barca.
Sure.
And
I don't think so. I mean, it's early in the season and I know, you know, you don't want to drop points because even at this early stage, because it opens the door for Barca, right? Because it is going to be sort of a, you know, if all goes to plan, it'll be a 2-horse race. But, you know, I suspect that, you know, Real has enough quality and enough depth that they should be able to, make do without Ronaldo. I haven't looked entirely at their schedule. I know they play Deportivo La Coruña on Sunday in the first league of the season. So if they can't beat Deportivo without Ronaldo, then they've got bigger problems.
Now, shifting our focus to Toronto FC, they beat the Portland Timbers 4-1 on Saturday at BMO Field. They are still unbeaten at home, 9 wins, 3 draws. This is a team that might be in a bit of a historic pace for success at home, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, this is, it's dating even back to last season, you know, how the unbeaten run. So, BMO has really become a fortress, and it's, you know, teams are, you know, they go in there, opposing teams, and they'll try different things. As Portland did, they tried to play and hit them out on the counter versus, Colorado in the previous home game where they just kind of sat back and nothing really seems to work. It's, one way or another, they're going to, the TFC are going to pick up points at home. So it's a tough place to play, no question.
With this pace that they're on right now, has there been any change at all in the way this team has played at home as a result of this? And what I mean by that is clearly they have a lot of confidence when they play at BMO Field. I mean, they have confidence everywhere, but they certainly have a lot of confidence at BMO Field. Are they, John, though, basically the same team at home as they are away from home? Or do they take a different approach perhaps at home than they do away?
I think they're the same team. It's interesting you ask this because Michael Bradley, after the game, talked a little bit about this and was quite open in saying, you know, we go into every game, regardless of where it is, home, away, where it is, who we're playing, that we're going to win. I don't doubt that they, you know, absolutely benefit from home field advantage because it's, you know, the home crowd and, you know, you're not sort of sleeping in your own bed and you have all the comforts of home. But is there much of a difference between how they play on the road versus home? No, I don't think so. They go into every game with the same mentality and same kind of style and playing to win as opposed to, not lose.
Justin Morrow had a couple of goals for Toronto FC. A guy that, you know, doesn't tend to get as much credit, obviously, as Jozy Altidore or Michael Bradley or Sebastian Giovinco. How integral is he to what Toronto FC has become?
Huge. I think he's one of the most underrated left fullbacks/wingbacks in the league. A very solid defender on the back end, obviously. Versatile player because he can play a number of different positions. But also an attacking threat, as you saw. He scored 2 goals on Saturday. I think he has 5 or 6 for the season. So he's tied for third with Victor Vasquez, which is pretty amazing. I think he scored more goals. No defender has scored as many goals in the last 2 seasons than him. So, he's absolutely huge. He's just such a consistent player, too, which is what I like about him. Since he's come to Toronto, you know, the consistency in performances has been there from day one, and he never really has a bad stretch of games for any length of time.
And I'm wondering too, John, if maybe he's not the type of player playing in the Gold Cup, playing for Team USA, that has to be a huge, I wouldn't say necessarily a boost in confidence, but there's something about being among your peers in a situation like that that has to make you, you know, feel good about yourself, or at least infuse you with maybe even more confidence than you had originally.
Sure, absolutely. And the fact that he's playing with guys the caliber of Bradley and Altidore at national team level, and you know, the U.S. has a very good team, that certainly helped. And he kind of talked about that as well after the game, just saying how he's had this renewed vigor almost, and you know, lease on life. And you know, it was a struggle for him to get into the national team, right? Because he mm-hmm. made that one appearance 3 or 4 years ago, and it was under Jurgen Klinsmann. It was just the one call, and he really had to fight back to get the attention of the U.S. national team. And he showed pretty well at the Gold Cup, I thought, to the point where now, you know, going forward, he's probably going to get continued calls. Maybe not start, but certainly he'll be in the frame of mind of Bruce Arena. So it's a big feather in his cap.
You know, one of the things that kind of strikes me about Greg Vanney, and we talked a lot about the success this team has had, and obviously they brought in some established players, some players who've been able to sort of provide the foundation. But in terms of developing players, in terms of taking somebody and making them better than they were when they arrived at Toronto FC, has that part of his job maybe not received enough claim, or he hasn't received enough credit for that? Because absolutely. I would think a guy like Justin Morrow has clearly he's profited from playing under Greg sure. Vanney.
Absolutely. I think that's one of his great strengths, actually. And you can see it in the play of Justin Morrow. You can see it in, you know, when he was starting last season, Jonathan Osorio. Mm-hmm. Guys have really sort of benefited. Marky Delgado is a great story, because this is a kid who Greg has known since he was 15, when they were together at Chivas USA. And then when he brought him over to Toronto, because they were together at Chivas. So, and now he's cracked the starting lineup mm-hmm. on a starting lineup that includes, you know, in midfield that has Michael Bradley and Victor Vasquez. That takes some doing. And there's no doubt that he's kind of, thrived under Greg Vanney, and he's really sort of shown the confidence in him. And that's the other thing too, that Greg, I think, doesn't enough get credit for. He really sort of shows confidence in young players. And even when someone has like a bad day, he's not going to sort of yank him from the lineup. He'll kind of stay mm-hmm. with him, right? So as not to punish him, and to show that he continues to have faith in him. So his sort of man management off the field and how he deals with the players, especially the young ones, I think is one of his great character traits.
And I think in a lot of ways, from Greg Vanney's point of view, it's probably a little easier to do that when your foundation includes players like Michael Bradley sure. and Sebastian Giovinco. You do have a certain amount of margin for error, is probably not the right word.
Leeway
when it comes to being patient with a young player, because you have players around him who can probably, on the days where things aren't going well, mitigate whatever damage he's doing.
No, I think that's true, absolutely. And that, no doubt that, you know, how could you not benefit from playing, you know, alongside Michael Bradley? That said, I mean, it does still take some sort of gumption, I guess, for lack of a better word, mm-hmm. for him to stick with, you know, a player, after a bad performance. And the other example was like Chris Mavinga. I mean, his debut back in like March or April was terrible. And this was a guy that, you know, a defender that they brought in the offseason, who they were hoping would really help solidify, you know, the back end. And his first game was pretty bad, and he yanked him out. But he eventually went back to him, and mm-hmm. it's the point now where he's, you know, he's one of the TFC's most consistent defenders, and he's been a key contributor. So, again, I really like the fact that Greg, keeps the faith with guys even after they have, you know, one or two bad showings.
It was the first weekend of Premiership action in the UK. Manchester United got off to just about, I would think, probably a perfect start for them, with Romelu Lukaku getting a goal and Nemanja Matic being probably, I guess you could say, he was the man of the match. He, mm-hmm. he was terrific. Is this Manchester United team more like a Mourinho team than last year's team? And do you think Matic was kind of that, he was that missing thing from last year?
I think so. And I think Lukaku as well. I'll speak to Matic first. I think he's just, you know, Mourinho described him yesterday as a stable player. And you can't sort of underestimate or overestimate guys, the importance of players like that. You need sort of someone like a Matichu, you know, probably not the sexiest player in what he does, but just holds things together in midfield, and he provides the platform for guys like, you know, Lukaku to do what he does. And I think he'll provide the platform for Paul Pogba to sort of pursue his attacking instincts more. And with Lukaku, I think he offers pace and more mobility much more than Ibrahimovic did last year. And that was kind of the thing that was lacking for United. Just the attack was too deliberate and slow sometimes. And I think Lukaku's speed and just his sort of instincts off the ball and the runs that he makes when he's not in possession is what's going to make United much more of an attacking threat this season. I think that's very much in keeping with, you know, the way Mourinho wants to play.
Now, there always is a danger into reading too much into the first week, but Chelsea not getting off to the type of start they'd like to get off to. There seems to be, which, you know, is great for those of us who pick them to finish first. But, you know, there seems to be tension between Antonio Conte and I don't know if it's Roman Abramovich or the football people between Abramovich and Conte. You know, Diego Costa's clearly unsettled. I think, what did he call him? He said he feels like he's been treated like a criminal by Chelsea. The window is still open, obviously. The transfer window is still open. Do you see Chelsea, you know, do you see this as just kind of a little tempest and that eventually the waters will be stilled, the Costa will move on or something will be done and things will kind of fall in place?
I think so. I mean, I'm not making too much of it. I mean, Costa, you know, that's a bit of a distraction, but I fully expect him to be moved out, you know, before the transfer window. Conte is, he's a strong personality, so I'm not surprised that there's controversy, for lack of a better word,
between him. Because he's pulled the chute on clubs before, hasn't
he? He has, yeah. So, you know, I'm not surprised that there's some, you know, he's calling out Costa or, you know, having a go at Ibrahim Abramovich about not sort of buying the players that he wants. So I'm not totally surprised by that. But at the end of the day, he's a great tactician and the type of manager who really gets the most out of his players and is very tactically aware. So I'm not reading too much into this result. Obviously, losing at home to Burnley on opening day is a poor result, even if keeping in mind that they were reduced to nine men eventually. But again, I think it's far too early to read too much into it.
The UEFA Champions League, the play-in or playoffs, I should say, start on Tuesday. Liverpool will not have Philippe Coutinho in the lineup, according to Jurgen Klopp. Obviously, he's another player. There's a lot of talk about Barcelona using some of the money they got from the Neymar transfer to bring him in. A couple of questions. If Barca were to bring in Coutinho and, let's say, Ousmane Dembele, does that mitigate the loss of Neymar? And secondly, beyond that, what if Jurgen Klopp just says, you aren't going anywhere and you're staying with us? How does that work out?
Second question first. Yeah, it's...
Because he might do it.
He might well do it. I mean, Klopp is, again, much like Conte, a very strong personality who kind of does his own thing, very much a maverick. So wouldn't surprise me in the least if he says, sorry, Coutinho, you're not going anywhere. How would it work? He would simply say, you're staying and you're not, you know, if you want to go, then go when your contract is done. He'll just have to take a hard line. And
generally what happens is these guys, when that happens, guys pout for a couple of weeks and then they just kind of, they're on the team sheet some Saturday and you go ahead until the window opens again.
Right. Coutinho is not sort of like a Diego Costa where he has a sort of a track record of, you know, causing havoc or whatever off the field. He seems like a pretty professional guy. So no doubt he'll be disappointed, but he'd eventually get work back into the lineup. If Barca can get him and Dembele, I think it does mitigate the departure of Neymar to a certain extent on the field anyway, because you're getting two quality players who, very young in their ages, can still, I think, would be cornerstones of that Barcelona franchise for a long time. Commercially, I know this maybe isn't the biggest consideration, but commercially you can't compare the two because Neymar is a world superstar.
Right.
And it would have been, you know, huge windfall for Barcelona to keep hold of him, right? But from a competitive and on the pitch, I think it does mitigate his departure somewhat.